from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in three letters, BMI. What's your body mass index? And what does it mean? It's one thing for adults to focus on weight, on BMI, on getting fit. But what about our kids? Well, doctors will often tell you that parents can have a hard time confronting the fact that their child is obese. Understandably, doctors have heard it all. Parents might say it's just a phase, it's still baby fat, they will burn it off in high school. But letting it go can have dire consequences. This hour we're focusing on an obesity treatment program for kids age 7 to 13. Those are crucial years. The program's free, but it's limited, and it is intensive. Weekly sessions for 16 weeks, then every other week for 2 months, then another 5 session over 5 months. It's kind of a pilot program, might be a one-time thing, one opportunity for 100 kids. We're going to talk about that. And listeners, if you have questions for our guests this hour about your kids, about body mass, about everything else associated with this topic, they're happy to help this hour. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. My guests for the hour include Dr. Steve Cook. He's an associate professor of pediatrics at UR Medicine's Golisano Children's Hospital, also the associate director for the Institute for Healthy Childhood Weight through the American Academy of Pediatrics. Nice to have you, Dr. Cook.
Thank you very much, Evan.
Also here is Laura Fasano, vice president of Healthy Living at the YMCA of Greater Rochester. They're heavily involved here. Laura, nice to have you as well.
Thank you. Great to be here.
It's a hard one for some parents. And Dr. Cook, I want to start with you because, like I said, I think it's understandable for parents to look at a seven-year-old and say, they're seven. You know, they're gonna burn it off. They're going to grow out of it, et cetera. What do you generally hear from parents? What are those conversations like?
Well, it's really important to have the conversation in an open way. And I think one of the first things that's really important that we're really kind of changing in our medical communication is asking the family permission. You know, saying, can we talk about your child's weight? Can we talk about their health? I mean, it's one thing to say, this is where they are in the growth curve. Their height's going pretty well. This is how their weight's going. Can we talk a little bit more about their weight and ask permission? And that's really, really an important first step, because if the family doesn't want to talk about it, they're sensitive about it, there's been other issues, you want to at least delve into that, because if they're in denial, then you aren't going to make any change anyway. They're not going to want to follow, you know, any suggestions. If the child's getting teased a lot or getting a lot of being picked on or bullied, then you want to be able to address it as well. Say, all right, let's not worry about their weight and let's talk about, you know, the mental health, the social stuff they're going through. So I think it's a really important piece. But when discussing it, it's important to know that, and science is showing us that the language you use is very important. So not so much say your child's fat, actually don't say that at all. And even using the words overweight or obese, you know, have a negative connotation with parents. Saying, you know, they're gaining too much weight, or they're gaining weight too quickly, or their weight's getting in an unhealthy range, is a better way to discuss it and to at least open the conversation. It's always a hazard, though, because sometimes families think, well, he didn't say they're obese, or they didn't say they're overweight.
Yeah, interesting.
So, you know, it is a kind of a tough battle. And then it also depends on the child's age, because a child who is 3, 4, or 5, we have a range that we consider, you know, obesity at in terms of their weight for height, their body mass index. But just that number alone doesn't predict their future of being an obese adult. Having two obese parents is a real strong predictor in that age group. So, you know, think of who it is you're talking to with the family. If you can ask them, you know, have you struggled with your weight? You know, has your doctor ever told you you're obese? Is something we ask pediatricians to consider asking about, because it gives you a good idea of, you know, both the shared genetics that they have with the child and the shared environment. Because the changes we're talking about and the why is working on are family changes. So it's important to keep it at a family level. It's not just the condition of the child. And one of the newer things or important things we're trying to discuss is when we really have to talk about obesity, and not everyone who's in that range has obesity as a disease, but use people first language. We don't say he's an epileptic, he's autistic, he has autism. So if a child is unhealthy, has medical complications or emotional or physical complications related to their weight and they're in an obese range, maybe we should say he has obesity. And that's the one condition, obesity is the one condition that is still struggling with that. I mean, mental health is very stigmatized in this country, but obesity is as stigmatized, if not more.
I have a very interesting email from a listener who saw what the subject of the program is going to be today, and I'm going to read that in a minute, because I think what Dr. Cook is saying regarding how blunt can you be, and is there a risk in massaging the message too much, but you have to be respectful. You know, look, if someone says to a parent, can we talk about your child's weight? And they're a friend or they're not a doctor. I can imagine they may not want to. But if a doctor says, can we talk about your child's weight? Do you have parents who say no?
We have parents that will say, can we talk about outside the room? You know, they're worried about their child being teased or picked on, their bully. So that's kind of one predictor. A lot of times they'll say, yeah, okay. And then it's like, well, I'm concerned. You know, then the follow-up, not so much as do they give you permissions. Then how do you follow it up? I mean, if you follow up with, you know, your kid's fat, you got to do something about this. You know, just cut your head off there because you just ruined any credibility. It's like, I'm concerned about the way they're growing and their weight is now in an unhealthy range and wanted to discuss that. And the next thing to think of is what is the parent hearing and thinking about? Because in a young child, in even pre-adolescent child, 2 to 9, 2 to 10, a lot of times they don't need to lose weight. If they're just within the BMI range of obesity, if they slow down their weight gain and they're still growing, they'll come into a normal weight range. So it's really important to think of the context of the child's age, where they're growing, how they're doing, because the parent may hear that and jump to, they got to lose weight. Actually, no, they don't. You need to change some behaviors, see what happens over time, because you have the advantage of this child's going to get taller and their weight for height may level out. And that is one of those feeds into the euphemism, oh, they're going to grow out of it. Well, they may in some sense, but is it because they also started getting interested in different sports or something too?
Well, I think about my own son, and it's amazing seeing a picture of him at about 3.5 now versus 2.5. You know, he had much more of a keg at 2.5 than he does now because he's stretching out, you know, and it's, but I'm not seeing it month to month. I'm seeing it every day. I notice it less, but then you see pictures and you say, wow, they really do stretch it out and things do change. But I guess part of the point is you don't want to just rely on that forever. So, so let me get Dr. Cook and Laura Fasano to react. I was going to do this later, but let's read this email now that came in this morning. And we'll see what you guys think of this. This comes from a listener named Peter. It says, Evan, I fear we're getting a little soft, pardon the pun. We're told that we can't criticize people for their weight and we have to celebrate all sizes. There are marketing campaigns urging people to embrace their size, to even celebrate being overweight. I'm not advocating that we should be rude, but when someone is dangerously heavy, do we have to pretend that it's just a natural weight, that it's beautiful? Doesn't that risk removing their motivation to get fit? After all, our tax dollars will pick up the bill in the future. Thanks for listening. That's Peter. He's advocating for a little bit more bluntness. Start with Dr. Cook. We'll ask Laura the same question. A little too blunt for your taste?
Well, that just gets back at the fact that obesity is the most stigmatized condition in this country. And the reality is that people make the assumption, based on appearance, they know exactly what this person's health status is. And the reality is that's not true. There's actually, that's where BMI is a fall down. You know, if you look at someone, their BMI is above 30, oh, they're unhealthy. Well, you can have someone who, at a BMI of 30, which is obese for an adult, may have, you know, diabetes with it, poorly controlled blood pressure, maybe sleep apnea, have horrible reflux that keeps them up at night, has major depression or anxiety associated with it. And their risk of complications, in some cases cardiovascular events or death, is much higher than someone whose BMI is 35 or 40, you know, is 50, 60 pounds above their ideal weight. And they have no metabolic problems with it. They have no emotional problems or physical or mechanical problems. And there's actually kind of an evolving way of defining obesity for adults in more of a staging system. So use BMI as the first point. Okay, BMI of 30 is stage one, and then classify it as, do they have minor complications, major complications, more than one major complication. And a group out of Canada has proposed this and studied it, looked at data for people longitudinally, and showed that it's not their BMI status, it was what their stage was. Almost like cancer. You know, not every cancer is the same. You could get diagnosed with breast cancer at a very early stage and cure it. With obesity, that's probably something we have to look at. But unfortunately, you can't look at someone and say, I know you have bad asthma. I know you have bad pancreatitis. But we look at someone based on their size and assume that. And it's well documented, it's been well studied, that obese individuals, adults and kids, are stigmatized. They do worse in school. They get passed over for jobs. They suffer more mental health problems. They're less likely to be married. They're paid less for the same job with the same qualifications. And if you look at teasing and bullying in kids, in school-age kids, the federal legislation was designed for children with, you know, developmental and intellectual disabilities or sexual orientation. The most common reason kids are teased in schools because of obesity.
Well, it, a number of other listeners also pointed me to the New York Times story that they saw this week with two different headlines. How often is BMI misleading? Or, yes, it's possible to be skinny fat, which was a little bit of a horrifying headline. But the point that the article was making is the same one you just heard from Dr. Cook, that you don't want to just look at a person and size them up and say fit, obese, et cetera, that in certain ways you can be technically, you know, thin, but also kind of in a different BMI than maybe you should be. So it's a fascinating article, and I would encourage you to read it, but it kind of dovetails what you just heard from Dr. Cook. Laura Fasano is Vice President of Healthy Living at the YMCA of Greater Rochester. How do you respond to Peter's email about, let's get more blunt here?
Well, it's funny. When we first posted on Facebook our involvement with the pilot, one of the first responses we got was, you shouldn't use the word weight and child in the name of your program. Now, we don't have control of that. This is as a national pilot that we're doing. So we just said, you know, thank you for the feedback. And part of the training that we put our staff through that our National Y did was really talking with the staff about using the term excess weight around children and families. And, you know, it's kind of funny. So we're trying to be very sensitive to the kids and to the families. And we're just, these are Y program directors that are running the program that have been trained in it. So, you know, our staff, when you sit looking from a program director's standpoint, they just want to work with kids, you know. So from our standpoint, we're really about the kids first and engaging the families and trying to be sensitive to everybody and be nurturing. We want to nurture all kids, no matter what size, shape they're in. And just as we want to make sure that we're not offending anybody and want to have the right language. But I will say the first comment we got off the block was about healthy weight in your child, about the name of the program. And somebody chimed right in with that.
Very sensitive to it. I would just say to Peter, I think everyone wants a better outcome for kids. And the question is, what's more effective? And what we're hearing from Laura and Dr. Cook is, you can shut people down if you are a little too aggressive. You can have people walk out. But, you know, I also take Peter's point. You know, I understand the sentiment. If you want to join the program, it's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255. To learn about this new program. All right, Laura Fasano, what's going on here? you know, and I think it starts just about a month from now. Is that right?
So right now we're in the stages of getting people interested in trying to drive families to the family orientation session. So I'll back up a little bit that over the course of last 5 years, Y's across the country have been pushing our national office that we have to have a program that focuses on kids who have a higher BMI and are either overweight or obese. So they've been pushing and pushing, and the CEO of the Y of Rochester has been the biggest pusher of them all around all of this. And over the past year to year and a half, the National Y gained licensure with a program called MEND. It's Mind, Exercise, Nutrition, Do It. The program's out of the UK. And finally secured that license that the YMCA of the USA can now begin to think about how to pilot and disseminate the program. The YMCA of Greater Rochester is one of five Ys that were the first Ys selected to pilot the program. And so what the phase we're in right now is we are going to run the program. It's a year-long program, and to kind of prove the efficacy of the program that when the Y does it in a YMCA community setting, we can still get the same outcomes as men did across the world. It's the most extensively researched program, childhood weight management program in the world. So with that said, one of five Ys, the only Y in New York State being selected, the program is a year-long program. It is for children between the ages of 7 to 13 years of age, whose BMI is in the 95th percentile or higher.
And what's that mean?
They are obese. They have been classified.
Obviously, I'm asking just to make sure. Yep. 95 or higher means at the very top of the range. Then.
Yes.
Okay, and you'd have to get diagnosed or, you know, you have to get technically measured in the 95th or higher to be eligible?
Correct. Okay. And the Y staff will do that. They don't have to get that information from their doctor.
Got it.
It is great, though, that they know that already, because our fear is at these family orientation sessions, folks will come in and not be eligible. Mm. And we are going to have to turn people away because we are a part of a pilot. So if you know that, but we will qualify the children at the family orientation session, which means that the children will get weighed and that we will take their height measurement. So the program, again, is a year long, and it's broken out into 16 weeks weekly. then every other week for 2 months, and then every month monthly for 5 months. Here's the main things about the program. It's 2 hours long. The first hour is program content, talk about healthy eating and healthy behaviors and how you incorporate that within the family. And then the second hour for the child is physical activity. And we will be running the Catch program, which is another proven evidence-based program that gets kids moving all the time, all kids moving all the time. The parent is engaged the whole time in this program. So the first hour, the parent is there with their child. And then the second hour, the parent kind of spends a half an hour alone with one of the content leaders. And then the second half an hour joins the kids in physical activity. So they will be active as well. So that's the big thing. It's kids 7 to 13, 95th percentile or higher. Parent or caregiver has to be involved.
Every session.
Every session. So it's not drop and go. Families are involved. There's family work every single week. When you go home, there's stuff that has to kind of work on. And then there is physical activity at the end for the child and for the parent.
Free?
It is a free program for this one-year pilot. The National Y has provided funding for us. And then last week, we did find out that the Greater Rochester Health Foundation is going to match that funding to ensure that we can deliver the program at a high level and still free. So this one-year program for this year is going to be free.
This is
a big gift.
It is a big gift, but you have to get families who will commit, don't you? And
yes.
This is not like, let's come out once a month or two different times. This is a big commitment.
Yeah, it's a big commitment on both ends. So big commitment for the family, and we need those families to commit for the pilot. I don't want to sugarcoat this. We have to kind of prove these outcomes. And so we need families who know we're going to commit. We're serious about this. Our child is serious about this, and we're ready to go. And we need 100 of those families to commit with us over the next 4 weeks.
So if you're listening to this program right now and you know anyone with a child age 7 to 13 that you think may be eligible, BMI 95 percentile or higher, mm-hmm. they can get in touch. How?
You can go right to the Rochester YMCA website. It's rochesteryMCA.org. There's a banner up there, Healthy Weight in Your Child. You can go right in there and sign up for a family orientation session. Over the next 3 weeks, there's about 7 of them. You can pick any one. Don't worry about that. That's not maybe not the program you'll be in, but to go and get qualified for the program, hear about the program, and enroll in the program, and then you'll be able to select which class you want to go to at what location. But those family orientation sessions are critical because we want to qualify the child there, and we want to get your commitment that you're all in.
And here is where I think we have to outline for anyone listening who's thinking about it, the why of it. I mean, the question of why may sound obvious, but then again, you may be a parent thinking, that's a lot of commitment, and I'm aware that my child may have an issue, but we can work on it at home. I don't know if I can commit for a full year of it, especially when my child's going to be with dozens of other kids who are clearly overweight. I don't want my child to feel stigmatized, et cetera. Is there a concern that kids age 7 to 13, if you're in that 95 or above BMI, that there is a really crucial chance to turn things around before it gets even more kind of dangerously down the road?
I do. I mean, I've been through the training, and I can see how this program can really, really help a family. Just by the content of trying to make small changes. The kids aren't going to get a diet. We're not prescribing diets or anything like that. We're trying to empower families to make some really good, healthy decisions. And it's not all over the place. So, you know, we're not talking about everything. We're really focusing in on healthy eating, decision making based on food labels, based on, you know, cultural preferences, like those types of things. It is a commitment, but the content isn't a heavy lift. It's a heavy lift to want to change. If you're ready as a mom, ready to walk down that grocery store aisle and have the 8-year-old turn the box around and look and see, what's the first ingredient? Are there a lot of ingredients? And together say, maybe we should put that back. That's what we're talking about here. And if you're willing to do that and be a part of that, then this program is definitely for, it's definitely for you. And I think with the, we talked a lot about this with the staff, with the physical activity, the Catch program is a lot of fun. And it's not about doing push-ups and jumping jacks and all that. It's about playing. And I think once kids get into the gym together and start to play and see that moving around and playing different games is fun and they feel good, they're going to want to come back.
What is the, I don't know if there is a best case scenario, what is the goal? If you have 100 kids, and let's say you get a best case scenario of participation, they're all there, they're there every time. After a year, what's the difference in the kids?
We would hope that either they maintain or there is some weight loss there, or we do take the waist circumference and that there is a reduction in the waist circumference measurement.
Okay. And before I get to your phone calls, Dr. Cook, the reason I pressed that point on why, given the time commitment, is this. I don't know if we have a stat in front of us, but my concern would be if you're between the ages of 7 and 13 and your BMI 95 percentile or higher, how many kids in that range end up becoming adults who are not obese?
Who are not obese? Depends on what their parents are like. But in general, you know, that age group, kids who are obese, probably 50% of them at least go on to be obese. If they're in a home with one or two parents who are obese, even higher. And even so, even at the 95th percentile, if you then look at a category called severe obesity, and there's a way to categorize that, 99th percentile, we've calculated it. National prevalence is about 4%. We've looked at it locally. It's about 4%. About 90% of those kids, 95%, go on to be severe obese adults, not a BMI of 30, a BMI of 35. And one of the really important things of MEND is it's not just a program. MEND has been well studied in England. It's been translated into a couple of countries. They have different age groups. The Y has done a tremendous job, really a remarkable thing for this country to try to put this in place because there's other age group criteria to look at. There's at least 39 peer-reviewed publications of these interventions and their work. They're part of two large CDC-funded trials in Boston, California, and other in Texas. So this is a good program, and it's not commercial. It's not gimmicky, but it's where the evidence is. It has to be intensive. It has to involve the parents. It doesn't get at calorie counting. It gets at behavior change in the family. And that's why the other bonus of family-based, child-focused interventions is there's a halo effect. You know, we don't see this with adult interventions. We only see it a little bit. What I mean is intensive lifestyle interventions, and those are defined by contact hour of 25 hours or more over 6 months at least. That's where the evidence shows there is a benefit for obesity treatment in kids. It's endorsed by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. And because it's endorsed, it's actually something that's supposed to be covered under the Affordable Care Act. Little known fact. Because insurance companies aren't covering for intensive type of services. For adults or kids, both of which are endorsed. But when you look at this type of intervention, it focuses on the behaviors, the strategies, the coping mechanisms, how to balance foods, emotional eating, how to deal with holiday stressors, you know, things like that, that get at actually a lot of parenting skills that we as pediatricians talk about. The intensity is appropriate, and we're trying to figure out, are there ways to do this, you know, kind of in a less intensive level? That's where the research is emerging, but you know, this is an intensive based intervention and getting families at the right point in motivation. So our job as pediatricians as frontline is engaging the family correctly at the beginning and, you know, getting them at the right place. And just because we say it's a problem, they still may not be that motivated, and understanding how to get them from being somewhat externally motivated to hopefully more intrinsically motivated.
Yeah, and that's why we go back to the beginning of the hour, the question of the bedside manner, the way we communicate. This is not saying to parents, your kid is fat. This is more saying, this is an opportunity. It's intensive. It's a commitment. And I don't mean to say if you don't take it, the kid is going to end up as an adult who is obese. But Dr. Cook, how would you answer this sort of fill in the end of the sentence here? If you don't do something like this and your child is in the 95th or 99th and is age 7 to 13, what happens?
So we know this puts them at risk for diabetes, early risk factors for cardiovascular disease. I mean, we're not seeing heart attacks in people in their 20s or 30s, but that is one of these kind of projected concerns. But, you know, type 2 diabetes, which we almost never saw in kids, we didn't see till middle age, we're seeing in our 20s and 30s. And having type 2 diabetes is kind of the risk equivalent of having a heart attack for predicting having another one. So, you know, yes, they may not have an immediate physical health consequence right now, but in the third decade of life being, you know, almost at the risk equivalent, higher risk for disabilities, you know, problems with their knees and their backs, breathing problems, acid reflux. And perhaps more importantly, because it's probably more common, is the mental health, emotional health issues around it. And that's, a really big piece of this. You know, the halo effect of this, something I mentioned briefly, is with these child-focused family interventions, you see a halo effect to the parent who participates. They lose weight. Sometimes another sibling loses weight. With the adult interventions like the DPP, I've never seen any papers that have published any benefit to the children. I've seen one paper that looked at a spouse. The only papers you see, research or interventions you see a halo effect on, and I'm not endorsing, is bariatric surgery. You know, women of childbearing age who get bariatric surgery, you do see weight loss in their children, but that's not what we want to be shooting for. So we need to have prevention. We need to improve community policies to make it easier to live in these environments. But when people are motivated and they're in this state, they need to have the opportunity to get treatment. I mean, not every obese child or family is going to go to something like this, nor are they going to be ready for it. But if they are ready and willing, we need to have these opportunities.
All right, Bob in Brighton, Bud in Chilai, Dave in Rochester, waiting on the phone. We're going to come to you in just a moment here. If you're just joining us, we're talking about a pilot program that launches next month with Dr. Steve Cook and Laura Fasano, who's the Vice President of Healthy Living at the YMCA of Greater Rochester. It is intensive, but it is free for kids age 7 to 13 and their caregivers, their parents, or a caregiver. And it is a big, big opportunity for about 100 families, 100 kids, if you want to get involved. So, Laura, real briefly again, the contact to get involved is what?
Go to rochesteymca.org/healthy-weight, or you can call our main office at 546-5500 and let us know what location you're looking at, and we'll direct you right to the person, contact person.
All right, short break. Your phone calls with our guests next. Coming up in our second hour, Inside Black Holes. We're not going there because if we did, we probably would never come out. But Stephen Hawking has new ideas for how black holes work and whether information or anything that goes into a black hole could ever get out. What is Stephen Hawking saying? What does it mean about the future of scientific understanding? We'll try to break it down next hour.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Rochester Regional Health's Sands Constellation Heart Institute, with offices at Rochester General and Unity Hospitals, Brighton, Greece, Dansville, and Geneseo. Caring for hearts in Western New York and the Finger Lakes for more than 15 years. For information, call 585-442-5320.
Welcome back to Connections. Bob in Brighton is first. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi, good afternoon. First of all, I want to commend you for doing this program. I think it's fantastic. But I'm curious, why don't you include the parent as well, or the parents as well, for a couple of reasons. One, generally speaking, I've noticed that if the child has a weight issue, so does the parent. The lifestyle at the home is probably a large contributing factor to the child having a weight issue. And if the parent... So most likely the parent has a weight issue as well. Or even if they don't, it could be certainly educational for the parent to be there, if not additional support for the child, to get additional information as to the importance of exercise. And lastly, I'm surprised that food is not talked about. I think it's probably at least a 50% contributor to the state of the child. And I think it's a very important thing to be talked about, because that change alone could make a significant change in the child.
Okay. Yes, go ahead. Yeah.
So the parent or caregiver is required to attend every single session. So it is not child-based. So that is definitely one of the main criteria for participation, is that the parent does involve. And like Dr. Cook just said about the halo effect, to be very clear, that during the family orientation session, if the child does qualify, the parent will actually be weighed as well. So during certain points of the program, program where we re-weigh the child, the parent will be re-weighed as also. So that will definitely happen. And the approach is around healthy eating. So not necessarily focused on types of food, but on the behavior of healthy eating. So we just need to, we're just very careful about saying what we will, what the curriculum does cover. And it's definitely focused on healthy eating and good food choices.
Yeah, exactly. I think, I apologize if you missed what we were talking about, but the parent has to be part of this. The MEND curriculum involves tracking of behaviors of both the parent and the child, and nutrition is a very important part of that.
Yeah, and well said. And Bob, thanks for the phone call. I mean, a lot of good points there. Back to the phones. Bud in Chilai is next. Go ahead, Bud.
Hi. I want to make 2 points. First of all, I'm sure your guests are aware of what started the obesity epidemic, and that was in the early 1970s when the government decided to cut back on sugar imports from Cuba. So they approved the manufacture and distribution of high fructose corn syrup, which is now used in pop in all kinds of prepared food. The problem is that the body does not recognize the sugar when it is intake. So it goes directly into fat in the liver and gets distributed through the bloodstream as blood sugar. Secondly, there is a drug approved for obesity weight loss. It works on the brain to reduce the appetite by making you happy with less food intake. It's called Belvic. It's B-E-L-V-I-Q, made by Arena Pharmaceuticals. For some reason, Medicare, and therefore all the Medicare Advantage plans, do not approve reimbursement. And I would want a hearing in the Senate to bring the Medicare people in and say, why is this not approved if this is the number one health issue in America? Those are my 2 points. I'm curious as to whether your guests are aware of either. Thank you.
Thank you, Bud.
So if there's one thing I could, because I get this question, what's the one thing? If there's one thing we could get people to do is not say there's one thing we can do. So the sugar epidemic has been purported as a very important influencer. And the reality is that the body, whatever form sugar you take it in, whether it's high fructose corn syrup or is it sucrose, you know, the way the body takes it in, if it's taken in rapidly in liquid form, it is handled the same way, not a healthy way, in the liver and therefore does shunt to fat. And well-intended researchers initially blamed high fructose corn syrup as a big culprit because of, you know, these types of macro-level economic practices. But the reality is that as we've looked at the science of sugar, that it's all sugar. So when you see something that says, oh, real sugar, you know, sugar is sugar. It's not really any different. So appreciate pointing it out. But there are so many things that have gone on into this. We're discovering new things related to bacteria in the intestine and how you absorb certain fats and calories and the fact that antibiotic exposure may alter that. I mean, whoever thought getting antibiotics would put you at risk for obesity? Well, guess what? That may be part of it. I mean, it's an emerging science, and it's not a personal choice. And I think that's a big piece of this. His second point, there's actually 4 medications approved by the FDA for treating adult obesity, none of which have actually been tested in children. I think the manufacturers are starting pilot studies to consider them for severely obese adolescents. But your point that Medicaid and Medicaid managed care, or Medicare and the Advantage plans aren't covering it, is a patient advocacy point. There are evidence-based strategies, behavioral strategies, and approved medications that under the Affordable Care Act are supposed to be covered. And they're not because it's being, I don't know, ignored, for lack of a better term. And it's something that's the old language of this is a cosmetic issue or lifestyle issue. It doesn't apply. We have the evidence. There are evidence-based interventions. And it takes patient advocacy, really, I think, to push this. So I'm not exactly opposed to that Senate hearing idea.
Okay. Boy, we're getting a number of comments from a lot of different places here. Joe on Twitter says, does it have to be a parent that attends, or could an adult sibling accompany the child?
It needs to be a caregiver that is definitely has influence in the home over basically food choices, and decisions are made around the home. So it really does need to be a caregiver or a parent that has that role and responsibility in the home.
Okay. Rebecca writes to us and says, "While I was excited to hear about this new program available to treat pediatric obesity, a very large and important problem in our community, as a family practitioner in the city, I'm also left with an overwhelming feeling of frustration that this is going to be yet another intervention my patients will not be able to take advantage of. The same children who live in the city who already have poor access to safe outdoor spaces to play and exercise, and poor access to healthy foods, are those whose families are going to have poor access to transportation and parents working multiple jobs and erratic schedule. How are they going to be able to attend weekly appointments for 16 weeks? If, in fact, a program of such intensity is what's needed to impact the health of these children, how can we better translate it to those who need it most?" That's from Rebecca.
So that's a great question, and that's kind of some of the stuff that we're tracking on behalf of the National Y as one of the pilots. I will say we have two sites that are going to offer the program in the city that are on bus lines at the Carlson Metro Center Y and the Monroe Branch. And we are open if people call. Because this is a pilot, we had to start somewhere, right? So you put it out there. But, you know, if people call and say, you know, this day and time doesn't work, or we need something over here, we're tracking those kind of responses so we can react fairly quickly to make something happen. But we have two programs in the city, and we've been distinct about where they're going to be so we can folks have access to it. And again, we're testing this level of intensity, meaning the year long and how it's broken out. So if the more comments we hear that maybe this works or this doesn't work, this is all getting funneled right back up to the National Y to be able to look at those things as we move forward with it.
I just want to mention to Rebecca as well. I mean, I think that is such a thoughtful and important point from her about transportation and the way poverty impacts families. You know, yesterday on this program, we had, among other guests, Dr. Ann Kress, who is the president of MCC, and we talked about why job training programs in this country basically don't work. If you go back years in this country, different states, different programs, federal, state, local, job training generally does not work very well for long-term placement in those higher skills jobs. And one of the reasons Ann Kress thinks that's maybe true is because you're training someone who's living in poverty. And you say, okay, now you've got the training, you've got the skills, go do the job. You're not accounting for what put them in poverty. And sometimes it's being a single parent. Sometimes it's being a single mother. Sometimes it's not being able to have the necessary transportation to pick your kid up from school and also be at work, pick up medication, do this and that. Transportation is expensive. And she says they're going to try to address that this time around in our community. And the Anti-Poverty Initiative is trying to understand all of those factors. So, Rebecca, I would just say, I think more than ever, that more than I've ever seen, this community is trying to figure out how you reach more people in poverty in those hard-to-reach places sometimes. But I'm glad you keep our eye on it. I mean, it's a really important question. Let me get back to the phones because I've got a number of other comments as well for our guests. But let me get another phone call. Who's been waiting? Dave has been waiting. Dave in Rochester. Next. Go ahead, Dave.
Hello, everyone. It's Dave Topoff in Pittsburgh Pediatrics.
Hi, Dave. Very good.
Great. So the one thing, I'm glad to hear you're doing parent or caregiver. I'd advocate for parent and caregiver as well because especially my preschool kids, I know the program's not directed at preschool kids, but also the problem starts then is that oftentimes both parents are working and the child is in the care of a grandparent. And as such, the grandparent has a very difficult role negotiating both caregiver and the grandparent wants to spoil the children, not say no to the grandkids. And if their program moves forward, working to bring them in if possible, so bring both the parent and the caregiver, as well as I think empowering parents or giving them ways that they can go back to their, you know, to their own parents, the grandparents, and saying, hey, you really got to take a role in this as a caregiver as well, and we know you want to be a grandparent who can, you know, who wants to spoil the grandkids. That's all well and good, but look at the body mass index, look how it's going up. It's really causing the grandchild a lot of problems. And so I don't know if you guys have the room or the space to incorporate more than, say, just the parents themselves.
So I've already looked at the folks that are registered, and there are a couple of grandparents who are the caregiver that are going to actually attend. And part of that second half hour for the parent actually focuses, one of the sessions does focus on the support around the parent, and actually is that's part of the curriculum. And we actually talked a lot about this in the training, that how to have those open, you know, the parent to their mother or the in-law, to have those conversations. So it is actually a part of the parent content of that second half, the second hour. But I already know that grandparents are already signed up as well.
Excellent.
Thank you, Dr. Topa.
Thanks for calling, Dave.
Always nice to hear from Dr. David Topa.
I'm feeling old now. I remember Dave as a resident.
Let me get a comment from a different Tim in, who wrote to the program. And Tim wrote to say that if a doctor was working with a 12-year-old girl and found evidence of sexual assault, that would be reported to police and dealt with. If the doctor found other evidence of whipping on a young boy, for example, that would be reported. But too often doctors tiptoe around obesity, and Tim is saying he feels like that's child abuse. That's his term. It's a strong term. Dr. Cook, again, are we going too far there, or do you take the point of some people who think we're being too sensitive?
That's a ridiculous term, because this is not something that is about personal choice. There is much more science and evidence showing, you know, metabolic imprinting, things that occur during the pregnancy that affect how genes are turned on for your metabolism, that a parent doesn't have a choice over. And it's not as simple to say, you know, they got to eat less and you can't give them those treats. Interestingly, one of the research scientists I'd seen at a presentation, he goes, a lot of lean people take a lot of credit for being thin. What they don't realize is they're very lucky the metabolism they have. And so we don't have controls over it. The idea of this being abuse is really disturbing, because it's trying to put parents who, as we just discussed, may be in poverty, maybe only able to afford $2 for food a day, and what you can get for $2 is pretty limited in a lot of our places in our community. Even if we were to think of, you know, a child who has severe obesity and severe medical problems related to it, I wouldn't even consider entering a concept of this child's being abused, because right now we don't have services to offer those families. You know, it's not like we can say, well, they're not getting treatment. Well, or they're not doing what they're supposed to, but we don't have what the evidence-based treatment services are. I had a resident ask me this, well, wouldn't you admit the kids at a hospital? I'm like, no one's going to pay for that. So why would we do that if we're just going to return them to a place where there's no treatment options, and trying to help change those behaviors? So I get really bothered by that type of comment.
On Twitter, here is a regular listener of the program. She calls herself Slacker Mama, but she's a regular listener. She's got three kids, and she says, promise me, Evan, you will ask about percentile charts. Why are we encouraged to get our kids into the upper percentiles for weight?
I'm not sure what that means. I mean, we don't encourage people to be in the upper percentile for weight. We have growth curves based on normal growth patterns. And ideally, you know, children are growing in those ideal growth patterns. The most recent ones are actually created from the World Health Organization, and 10 countries put normally growing children in it. So it's a predictor of children being in a normal range. I think the disconnect is that we always want our children to achieve high. So, wow, 95th percent, that sounds better than 80th percent. Well, no, not in this case. So I apologize if there's confusion about that. And it's one of the faults of BMI and the growth curve. It's not an easy concept to describe to families. So I'm not entirely sure what she's getting at there. But it's also the fault, I think, of the growth curves and how we try to explain them.
Okay, another Tim in Pittsburgh. Tim says, kids need to get outside and play instead of sitting in front of the TV for hours doing nothing at all except eating. I partially blame the parents, because it's easier to sit the kid in front of a TV as opposed to actually having to interact with them outside. I truly believe technology has ruined our kids in this aspect of life. Strong comment, but let's see what our panelists think. Dr. Cook?
I agree with you 100%. I mean, it's hugely impactful regardless of child weight. I mean, kids are more sedentary for a variety of reasons, and with that, there's a lot of mindless eating. And these are technologies that everyone is assuming is safe, but handing a tablet or a phone or a computer to a 2 or 3 year old and letting them play games on it or read books on it is in
or 7, 8, 9, 10, right? So whatever
well, right.
the age.
I mean, but I see this in our office. A family has a kid there, and the kid's running around, and they put a tablet in front of them to calm them down and be quiet. Well, that kid's getting habituated to this type of sedentary behavior, and people think, oh, but it's fine, it's good for their brain. Well, no, we have no evidence that's good for their brain or beneficial. If anything, we have evidence to suggest it's harmful. So yes, in that sense, I agree that the parent does have a role here in looking at it, and society is driving a lot of that too. So it's a rough spot, but I agree with them.
It is definitely easier to put a kid in front of a television, no question. Put a video on, put a show on, and it does take work to be active and engaged. But Tim, I appreciate the comment. Laura Fasano, Vice President of Healthy Living at YMCA of Greater Rochester. What do you make of Tim's comment?
Well, we're in the business of getting families out into the community and come and be active. So, we want families to think about the why as an opportunity. If you're struggling as a parent to say, what can I do? There's swim lessons. There's sports lessons. And our approach is all children, right? So, if you're struggling, like you don't know what to do, we are a great community. Let me just toot our own horn. We are a great community resource for families. And if it is something that, depending on the age of the child, that the parent wants to be engaged too, we have the child watch situation where younger kids can engage in smaller activities and the parent can be active. Anecdotally, here's what we hear from our camp surveys. We get 2,000 kids, over a course of a summer participating in day camp. And folks go to overnight camps and you hear over and over again, they're so glad they're outside and playing and not in front of the TV and the tablet. And, you think about what day camp represents. And, there are opportunities out there. We're a great opportunity, but there's tons of opportunities out there where kids can go and engage outside the home. But it does take an effort of the parent to drive somewhere or take the bus somewhere to do something. But, we are a great community resource here in this county. We've got 10 operations with pools and gyms and programs for all kids, all shapes, all sizes, and hope people, take advantage of that. And the other good thing about our organization is that, if you can afford us, that we do have financial assistance and scholarships for kids programs, for camp, for family memberships to take advantage of this great resource we have in the community called the YMCA. Little plug there.
It's okay. It's partially why you're here. Real briefly here, a listener named Lindsay asked if I had seen a story before the hour began, and I printed out just a couple thoughts. She wanted to know what our guests think of this idea. So here it is, the headline, New York City Happy Meals Bill. Childhood obesity rate could fall if nutritional requirements are implemented. And here's the story. A bill introduced in New York City that would implement nutritional requirements for kids' meals at fast food restaurants has the potential to curb childhood obesity if passed, according to an NYU Langone Medical Center study. Under the Happy Meals Bill, fast food chains would be required to include a serving of fruit, vegetables, or whole grain in any meal marketed to children using toys or promotional items. The bill also would limit the meals to 500 calories or less, with fewer than 35% of calories coming from fat, only as much as 10% from saturated fat, fewer than 10% from added sugars, and no more than 600 milligrams of sodium. And they're saying this could have a big impact. Dr. Cook, have you heard of it? What do you think?
I've heard a little bit about it, and there's a number of states considering similar bills. And back to the old phrase earlier, there's more than one thing that needs to be done. This is one sandbag in the pile of sandbags we need to hold back this flood. I think the key piece to that is limiting the total calories to 500 calories. I mean, that's really kind of a big driver. We know kids who, when they eat out at a restaurant or fast food restaurant or takeout, consume 40% more calories than the same meal they eat at home. Same with adults. New York State actually has a little promotional program called I Choose 600. Just think of 600 calories as the meal as an adult you choose when you're out to eat, and that'll give you a good rough ballpark. The composition within it then is not as much of a concern. So I think it is a good first step. I'd love to see them get the marketing to children out of it, because we know that's a big player. Why do they do it? Because it works. It's like it doesn't have an effect, then don't do it. So the reality is, I think the bill probably has that potential based on the calories, but it's only one step that we have to look at. And sometimes, you know, you have families who overeat at home without any of these types of takeout food, so you're not even hitting them.
And that's a New York City proposal, by the way. And if you're wondering how many fast food chains, Happy Meals or kids-based meals, actually meet the requirement that the law would have, right now, 2%.
Exactly.
2% actually meet those requirements that we may change to. I've got about 20 seconds left here, so let's just make sure that people know if you want to get your family or a child involved in this program, Laura Fasano from the YMCA of Greater Rochester, where do you want our listeners to go to?
Please go to rochesteymca.org/healthy-weight, our website, sign up for a family orientation, or call our direct line at 546-5500 and indicate kind of what location you would be interested in.
It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. And I know you're working hard to get families who are going to commit to this. I hope they do, and I hope you'll come back and tell us how it goes.
We'd love to.
Thank you so much for coming in, Laura Fasano, Vice President of Healthy Living, the YMCA of Greater Rochester. Nice to see you, Laura.
Thank you.
Dr. Steve Cook, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at UR Medicine's Golisano Children's Hospital and Associate Director for the Institute for Healthy Childhood Weight. Nice to see you, Dr. Cook.
Thank you.
All right, short break. More Connections talking black holes next.